Hello, my name's James Pikeway, and this is the Nightline Podcast. If you're interested in cars, car repair, music, fitness, technology, and more, this is the podcast for you. Interested in more of what's going on at Dubai Eye? Go to DubaiEye1038.com and search out our podcasts and blogs. Want to get in touch with me? Nightline at DubaiEye1038.ae. Enjoy the show. And it is the call-in show. Welcome to the program. And this evening, we are going to be talking parenting and all of the necessary skills that you might think we have or don't have, or where do we find them. If you're like me, you've walked through Borders and you've looked at every single shelf and you've said, I need some advice. Now I've got teenagers. Oh, now my teenagers have turned into 20-year-olds. I've gone through the infants. Every step of the way was a grand learning experience. Where do I get the advice? How do I figure out what's going on? So I thought, you know what, let's turn it over to you this evening and let's have a conversation about parenting. What do we know? How are we doing? Where do we learn these skills? What skills do we need? And the list goes on. And who do we have to join us? Well, none other than Dr. Sarah Rasmi, who is a friend of the station. You've been on several of our other programs, so I feel like I've kind of stolen you away from Tom Urquhart and the Business Breakfast, which you can see the smile on my face because that means you're here in the evenings. Welcome to program.
Thank you. It's so nice to be here.
We're going to have a lot of fun this evening, actually.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it.
And we've already got texts in from Alain, which I think is fantastic because you have been spending your time in Alain at United Arab Emirates University. You are a psychologist, and this is why you're here. I mean, this is what you do. You talk about families, you talk about parenting, you talk about working with children on everything from innovation leadership to conflict resolution and happiness. Mm-hmm. And the list goes on. So we've got the perfect person to help navigate us through issues with parenting and communication with parenting. And, you know, there's another side of this as well, Sarah, that as I was thinking about you joining us here, and it goes back to James Kelly, because we have James and I have lots of conversations, as we do, mostly off air, and it's always ends up being about parenting. My kids have now moved back to Canada.
Yep.
His kids, he's got almost a soccer team, right? And they go the gamut from being very young to a little bit older.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things we constantly return to when we start talking about our kids is our communication with our spouses, because the kids somewhere fall in between. They start playing us off against each other.
Absolutely.
And my wife and I have different parenting styles. James has a different parenting style than his wife. Somewhere you meet in the middle and you negotiate what you're going to do. And man, the conflict that can't ensue, which again opens the door to someone like yourself to help us navigate our way through. What are we doing and how do we survive this? Not just bringing up the kids, but the relationships with our spouses that are developing with those children. So.
Yeah, well, parenting is definitely rewarding, but it's probably the most challenging job that we have in the world. And there's a lot of information out there. And I think the biggest piece of advice that I'd like to give to the people that are listening is to just trust yourselves a little bit.
You want me to trust myself?
Yes, definitely. You know, people parented for generations upon generations without the books, without Google even, and the children survived and they thrived. And I think, you know, that we have innate, instinctive, you know, abilities to raise and nurture our children. And sometimes we need to just tap into those and focus on those. Of course, there's a lot of evidence-based scientific things that we can draw from to improve and to expand our toolkit. But I think the most important thing is for us to go back to what our instincts are. Because if you are in a situation where you've read something in a book and the book tells you, you know, you should do X and Y, and that X and Y doesn't really resonate with you, it doesn't sit well with you, it goes against your instincts, it goes against your values, you're never going to be able to maintain it. You're never going to do it consistently. And consistency really is key. So going back to the instincts, I think, is really the first thing to do.
Trust yourself.
Mm-hmm.
I want to back up for a second. What provoked you to get into this career path? What made you go down the career path of psychology?
So it really started in graduate school. I started my master's degree at the University of Guelph in social psych, and I've always been interested in people and relationships. And I always tell my students that I noticed that I'm just a really curious, almost nosy person. I like to know what people are doing.
You could be a reporter then.
Yeah. You know, I really wanted to be a reporter for a little while, and then I took social psych in college, and I realized that this is just a scientific excuse for me to kind of try to understand people, which is something that I've always been curious about and always wanted to do. And then when I entered graduate school, I just realized that, you know, I have always had a really great relationship with my parents. I mean, we had our ups and downs, absolutely, but for the most part, I've had a really good relationship with my parents. And I realized that not everybody around me was so fortunate. Mm. And so what I wanted to do was figure out what really makes a parent-child relationship strong and what are some skills and strategies that parents can learn to improve that, because we do see from a lot of research that parent-child relationship has a massive influence on children's development and adjustment later in life.
And it constantly evolves, that relationship.
Absolutely.
Which mm-hmm. can be a really difficult one as mm-hmm. parents see their children sort of at that one age, and they don't, at some point, maybe they don't transition to, mm-hmm. well, now they're young adults, and hold on, now they are adults, and now they're, and it, that can really strain things.
Definitely. And parents will always be your parents, you know. I have two kids. I've got a toddler and a teenager. And
I met your toddler on the phone first time we spoke.
Oh, yeah.
She was in the background.
Screaming, hi, Dada. That was really funny.
That was interesting. That was a lot of fun, actually. Yeah. That was one of the best phone calls I've ever had.
She was really excited that she kept saying hi, Dada, for about 10 minutes after we hung up. So she liked that. But a lot of people always ask me, like, you've got a toddler and a teen, and those are two notoriously difficult ages. Which one is worse?
And you have no gray hair. That's amazing.
Thank you. I'll thank my hairdresser for that later. But the thing is that every age and every stage has its difficulties, its challenges, and also the good things. You know, when I complain to my mom sometimes about the toddler some days, the teen the other day, she's like, you know what? You're in your 30s, and sometimes you're a big pain to me. So no matter what.
We got to get your mom on the phone.
Yeah. Poor thing is sick, or I would call her in and call her out on that. But, you know, they're always going to be our parents, no matter how old we get. Mm. And they're always going to worry about us and want the best for us. And, that role just, it never stops.
We want you to get involved in the program as well. In fact, it really is that opportunity to fire some questions our way. Sarah has, you've thrown it out on Instagram.
And I have.
And we'll see if we get any hits that way. Of course, we've got our SMS lines. And I think it's actually really cool that one of your students from UAU has already come through. And it's actually, in a sense, wishing you, you know, best of luck as you move forward in your career.
Yep.
And also, she's got a question, but I'm going to read it out because she has taken the time. It says, hi, Dr. Sarah. This is one of your students at UAU. I feel sad that this was your last course, and I wished if I could take more classes with you. I have two questions that I would like to ask you. First of all, advice for a mother of a baby studying at university. So how do you deal with being a mom and having that child? And second, she wants to know why I only gave her a B.
Well,
joking, she says.
I think I gave you enough feedback. I don't actually know who sent that question in, but I gave you enough feedback and you had plenty of opportunity to ask me that off air. But going to the series question, advice for a mother of a baby.
Oh, man. This is a tough one.
Yeah, it is really tough. And I think parents in general that are working or studying or have other commitments, it's a really big challenge to be able to manage all of your responsibilities and navigate all of your roles. And I think it really comes down to, number one, just being a little bit kind to yourself and understanding that you don't have to be the perfect mom or dad all the time.
What about the guilt, though? I mean, the guilt that you're, you know, oh, my child is now getting brought up by somebody else. I should be giving that child more time. Then, you know, I guess it becomes even compounded by the fact that you got the child in daycare. Maybe it's at the university, which would be great. Mm-hmm. But also, you got to study. You got to write papers. Mm-hmm. And maybe your husband's taking care of the child then, and you feel, I'm letting down the child, and then, oh.
The guilt is really real, but the thing is that there have been a lot of studies that have been done to look at whether it's the quantity of time that you spend with your kids or the quality of time, and what the research shows is that it's not how much time you spend with them, it's how good that time is. So what I would say to this mom or to anyone else out there who's struggling with work life or school life balance is just make the most out of the time that you have with your kids. Even if it's just 15 minutes at the end of the day, even if it's the bedtime routine, even if it's a bit of time around the dinner or the lunch table, make the most of that time. And one of the best ways to do that is to do something we have a really hard time with, and that's pushing away all of our technological distractions and really just focusing and connecting with each other.
I know some parents, both moms and dads, mm-hmm. who do the big commutes, because when we're coming into the studio at night, I pass those people heading home, and there it is a long queue of people. Mm-hmm. I know several families now that as soon as they get home, the phones go into the chargers, they turn them on to mute. Yep. And they say, okay, for the next 2 hours, it's just I'm home and it's me and the kids, mm-hmm. and or just my spouse, and there's, you know, no issues. Mm-hmm. Nothing's going to distract us.
Yeah, so that's one of the things.
Which is hard to do, though.
Yeah, it is definitely hard to do. I think we can all probably do it for some amount of time. It might not be the whole evening. Even if it's 15, 20 minutes, like I said, that's good. Yeah. One of the ways to approach it is time-based, like you said, to say, you know, for this period of time, we're putting away all of the distractions. The other thing is to make it more of a zone-based thing. So when we're around the table, when we go out to dinner together, right. we're going to leave our phones at home, put them on silent or whatever, and really just pay attention and connect and look each other in the eyes and actually listen and reflect on what the other person is saying and bond in that moment. That's much more valuable than if you're sitting at home with your kids or out with your kids and not actually connecting with them. It's the quality of that time.
There's a great ad that was running a couple of weeks ago with Will Ferrell, mm-hmm. and it was a media literacy turn off your phone mm-hmm. kind of ad, and it was right around Thanksgiving, actually American Thanksgiving, mm-hmm. and he's sitting at the table and everyone, you don't see him, and you just see the whole family lamenting, you know, poor dad and this and that, and then they pan over and there he is on his phone, and he's just texting away and totally mm-hmm. disengaged from the family.
Yeah, and, you know, we're all guilty of doing that at one time or another, but it is important for that connection that we make sure that we have some time where we actually do focus. And if you've got the willpower to have your phone or whatever it is on the table in front of you and not actually be looking at it, then go for that. But for some of us, it's a little bit more tricky and we need to put in that added effort of keeping it out of sight so that it's out of mind a little.
I want to come back and talk a little bit about what it means to be an effective parent. Mm-hmm. What a broad word, but you've said it twice now. You've got to just trust yourself. You got to go with your gut on so mm-hmm. many things. I want to talk a little bit about how we actually put that into motion and how we, it's easy to say, but not so easy to do. Mm-hmm. And of course, if you've got some questions, Dr. Sarah Rasmi is in studio with us. She is a psychologist who is going to walk us through parenting. And that's what we're really talking about. How many of us have some issues with this, especially if you were a parent, are a parent, you've got parents, you're still dealing with these things. This is a great opportunity to, you know, get some of these questions answered in a great environment right here on the Nightline family. You're listening to Nightline. It's the Call-In Show. Call-In Show. We're talking about parenting. Dr. Sarah Rasmi joining us in studio. Welcome again to the program.
Thank you.
Now, you threw this out on Insta Story that you were going to be on and say, hey, if anyone's got some questions they want to fire through to us, we'd love to hear from you. And you've got a response.
Yes, I have a few. Let me see. So one of them that I just pulled up right now is about nutrition and diet. So it's not fully parenting related. But
are you kidding? That's huge, because I've got the option when my kids say, Dad, can I have the girl?
Yeah.
And, you know, I got to say, we played hardball with our children. I mean, my kids are like adults now. Mm-hmm. We played hardball with them about the fizzy drinks, and we let them have occasionally. But, you know, my youngest now will go out somewhere, you know, he's 20 years old, mm-hmm. and he orders water.
Yep.
And he's eating sensibly, and he's making, and now he cooks for himself.
Yep.
And I think as a parent, you know, we sort of hope that we were instilling healthy eating habits in our kids.
Exactly.
And we still had cookies, we still had stuff, but he's now at college. Mm-hmm. He's not on a meal plan. Mm-hmm. He cooks for himself. And I sort of,
that's awesome.
You know, I think my wife and I got a tear in our eyes when he called us one day. And first of all, when he said, you know how much milk costs? it's really expensive, Dad. And it's like, finally he realizes, eating good food and healthy food isn't necessarily the most inexpensive thing. Mm-hmm. But also when he said, you know, he's just cooking like us. He's cooking the same kind of way. And his roommates in the dorm, because they have a kitchen in this dorm, said, are you going to culinary school? He's saying, yeah, no, I'm in music. So it was, I thought, that's really kind of cool that only years later do you realize, because the whole time they lived at home, they were sloths, right? They're on the couch, what's for dinner, what are we eating? And then, and you kind of think, oh, have we failed as parents? And they leave, and then suddenly you sort of get that the marquee that going, you did the right thing.
Yeah, exactly. And I think this really comes down to the fact that our kids, they learn from what they see us doing. Yeah. And
but you always
have to
remember
by example.
You forget about that, though.
Yeah.
You know, or
especially on tough days.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
You know. But they do. They come back to that, especially when it comes to things like lifestyle choices. Mm-hmm. So it's important that we try to instill healthy habits in our kids. But like you were saying, it doesn't have to be, you know, the picture perfect, most nutritious, healthy, balanced meal all the time. We just need to try to instill those healthy choices in them so that when they have the opportunity to make a decision, they make the right one.
I ran roughshod over your Instagram message here.
No, that's okay. Because what I was going to say actually was something a little bit different. And I was going to say that in general, there is a massive link between psychology and nutrition. And what we eat has a huge impact on a lot of things, including our well-being. And so it's important that we pay attention not just to what we're feeding our children, but also to what we're eating. And, you know, that leading by example thing. If we want our kids to eat more veggies and more fruits and more lean meats and all of these kinds of things, then they need to see us actually practicing what we preach and not just telling them what to do.
And it's pretty hard when, you know, I mean, I drive by the McDonald's every day. I see the signposts. They're marketing pretty heavy for everyone. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and they make it really affordable and easy.
They
can be just riding home. The kids are in the back seat. I just pull into the drive-thru, solved, they're fed, you know, phew.
Yeah, well, you know, and I think one of the things that's challenging as well is when you have really young kids, it's a lot easier to control what it is that they're eating. But when your kids get a little bit older, what happens is you have far less control because they go to school. Who knows what happens at the school cafeteria? And they're also at their friends' houses. And if their families don't have the same, you know, eating habits or even video game preferences, that's a big one in our house, then you can't exactly control that. So it's important to try to instill what you believe in, your values in your kids, and hope that they're going to make the right decision.
We didn't let our kids watch. So my kids used to watch TV, but we moved here in 2000, and so we were still, you know, VHS tape people at that point. And all of the TV they watched, we didn't have any satellite TV. All of the TV they watched was from discs or tapes.
Yeah.
So we had total control because we knew what everything was. So they watched, you know, all the Thomas the Tank Engine and, you know, some Disney stuff and PBS things and the list went on, Radio Canada stuff. It was kind of cool because we had total control. Now, the flip side is now that they're older, they also don't watch much TV. They'll watch movies and things, but they're not. And, you know, now they're older, so a bit of Netflix maybe. But they're not big into TV because they just watched very selectively when they were a lot younger.
But it's so much harder to limit that the same way right now because our kids have screens everywhere they go. They're integrating screens into the classroom. A lot of kids have phones. They have, you know, TV. They watch YouTube. The things they watch on YouTube blow my mind sometimes, but it's much more difficult to restrict what they're doing.
What does a parent do? Because on one hand, I mean, how do you advise people? Because on one hand, you want to make sure that your children are getting that exposure, they're understanding technology, they're understanding the limits, they're learning, and the list goes on. But on the other hand, you don't want them becoming just, you know, addicts to this constant repetition and entertainment and fast edits and the list goes on.
I think one of the most important things is for us to make sure that whatever media our kids are consuming is age appropriate for them. And my favorite resource is commonsensemedia.org, and it's a website you can go to, and you can search basically for anything, and it will tell you at what age it's appropriate for a child to watch or listen or play that particular thing. The other thing that they have on that website, which is really cool, is a template for a technology and social media contract. And I think for kids that are a little bit older, it's a really good idea to have an open discussion with them about using technology and social media, the fact that it's a privilege, if that's what you believe it is in your family. In our family, it is. It's a privilege. And explain to them that you get it in this, under these conditions, for this amount of time. If you don't fulfill your end of the bargain, then you don't actually get that. And instead of making it kind of a vertical communication where you tell them how it's going to be,
which is the way most parents work. I mean, I'm guilty of it, hands up.
I am too. And it happens. It
doesn't work so well all the time.
But people are much more receptive and open to something when they feel like they're a part of the process. So when you engage with them and ask them, what do you think is appropriate, and give them a chance to speak and not shut them down right away, which can be tricky. Then you come up with your terms and then go with that. I find that really helps a lot. And most importantly is we can't get mad at them for being on their screens all the time if we're on our screens all the time.
Again, we're right back to leading by example.
Yep.
And I mean, how many parents, that's where they are all the time.
Yeah,
even
definitely.
Even at stoplights, it gets a lot to be on your phone, but people are on it.
Yeah, definitely. And I've had moments in my life where I've been particularly busy at work, and my two-year-old, you know, she will come and push my phone out of my hand, and my older son will just be like, Mom, what's more important right now, me or that? No, he's
that's a stinger.
Yeah, like, he knows.
You can
he
feel
knows.
Yeah. Burned.
He knew that was going to burn.
Yeah.
And he went right for it. But when he says that, I reflect on it and I try to do it better the next time, knowing that I'm not going to do it better every single time. But that's part of growing as a parent, growing as a person. It's reflecting on what you've done, how you can improve, trying again next time, and not beating yourself up for not being the perfect mom or dad.
And that's the tough one is when you get called out by your kids.
Yeah.
How do you react to that? I mean, I think how many parents are listening right now who have been called out by their kids, and whether they make a joke of it or whether they get angry because they know they're wrong, and you're ultimately setting that bad example.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really tough one. How do you talk to people through that?
I think something that's really important as well for parents is for us to show our kids that we fail. And so there's a huge...
Parents can't fail. Come on, Sarah.
No, they can. They can. And we do all the time. And there's a huge body of literature that shows that having a growth mindset, instilling a growth mindset in our kids is actually better for them. And a growth mindset basically means that the focus is on the process and not the outcome. So it means that when we fail, instead of kind of trying to distance ourselves from failure, it's embracing it and saying, you know what, I failed. This is what went wrong. This is what I'm going to do better next time. And when we do that in front of our kids, we're teaching them a couple of things. The first is that we're not perfect, which is important. We don't want them to hold us to unfair standards. And it's also refreshing for them, because if we're acknowledging that we're not perfect, it then an extension of that is that we don't expect them to be perfect. And the important thing is that they learn how to react and how to pick themselves up, dust themselves off, and try again. And the research demonstrates, it's by Carol Dweck out of Stanford, most of this shows that people who do that are much more successful academically, and they're also much more resilient. So failure is not a bad thing. And it's okay to say, you know what, you're right. That actually wasn't a cool thing for me to do. I'm going to try better next time.
I'm always wondering, do we have, is there a rule book somewhere? Is there an instruction guide somewhere?
There are probably dozens. Are they any good? I don't know.
It's almost like, you know, when you have kids, you almost feel that someone should be sort of giving you a one-page handout saying, okay, here's the top things you just got to keep in mind. And if you can do this and build on this, you stand a chance.
You know what? I have to say, like, there are a few
Not that I advocate that, but
no.
I sometimes think, oh, I wonder.
There are principles, though, and there are principles for everything. And one of the things that I do in the community is I give workshops, and one of the workshops that I offer quite a lot has to do with, like, the top tips that I have for parents. And they're all quite general, because you've got a couple of kids, I've got a couple of kids. How can we write a rule book that applies to every single child that's out there when our kids in our family are different, right? So there's a couple of general principles that we can adopt, one of which is being kind to yourself, not expecting yourself to be perfect, embracing failure, taking it as an opportunity to grow. And the other one is forming a strong bond. I think that that's really the essence of a good relationship, and that's what we see in literature translates to good outcomes later in life.
We're talking about parenting with Dr. Sarah Rasmi. You can actually find her, www.drsarahrasmi.com, if you want to go look this up and see who I am talking to. But if you've got questions along the way, we'd love to hear from you right here on The Colin Show. We're talking parenting. What are we talking about this evening on The Colin Show? Well, I have Dr. Sarah Rasmi joining us. She's a psychologist, and we're talking about parenting. We're talking about some of the pitfalls that we all have to deal with as we navigate this wonderful world of parenting and how we learn what to do and how we understand what to do. You're looking at your phone. Do you have another?
I have Instagram Live on right
now.
Oh,
fantastic.
So that people can send
okay,
in their messages.
There we go. We'd love to hear from you if you've got a question, query, comment that you want to fire at Sarah about parenting. It could be anything from, how to deal with conflict, how to deal with your children. I keep coming back to your number one piece of advice.
Mm-hmm.
Trust yourself.
Yeah.
Which is the hardest thing to do. Am I doing it right? What if I'm doing it wrong? Am I going to cause... I wonder if, in a sense, we've almost had insecurities sort of bred into us through example, because we live in a world where we're constantly reading and seeing and hearing examples of, well, this is how you have to do it.
Yep.
This is what it means to be successful in business. This is what it means to be successful in a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what it means to be successful in parenting. And where do we see a lot of that stuff? Through the media.
Yeah. And the thing is that a lot of it changes, but there are a couple of things that have kind of remained the same over time. And before the break, what I was mentioning is that we need to form a strong relationship with our kids. And there are a couple of good ways to do that. And one of the best ways to do that is to connect with them, as we've discussed before, to spend quality time with them, to talk to them, to listen to them. That's often the harder part for parents, is to actually put on our listening ears and to hear what they're saying and to, you know, treat it with the importance that it has for them. Because you know how it is with kids. A lot of the times, the things that they want to talk about to us are not super interesting.
Yes.
And they're not really the biggest deal in the world. And, you know, you have to bite your tongue sometimes because you just want to look at them and say, seriously, just get over it. You'll be fine. You won't even remember this.
Yeah.
But you have to remember that in that moment, for them, this is the worst thing ever. And being able to empathize with them and to just support them and keep that open line of communication is really helpful, because it means that they'll have that secure connection with you and they'll feel like they can reach out to you if they ever do find themselves in a tricky situation.
Yeah, and that's exactly what you want. And I got to say again, pat on my back to my wife for really working hard at keeping that connection with our own kids, and I guess myself as well, because my kids talk about to us about everything, and to the point that sometimes it's like, okay, too much information.
You know what? Yeah.
But I'm glad to be able to say to them, okay, you're giving me too much information, but they still feel absolutely 100% comfortable at coming to us with everything.
Yeah.
And I think, wow, that's kind of
really
cool.
That's really important, especially as they get older and they're out of the house more and they're subjected to more peer influence, and you know, they're not the best at controlling their impulses and delaying gratification. So having that open line of communication is really key. The thing that I wanted to mention just then is that another really important point for parents is this idea of father involvement.
Right.
And so when it comes to psychology, we pretty much neglected fathers for a really long time. All of the early studies were simply done with mothers and kids. And there were a couple of reasons for that. One of them was that dads were just thought of as a paycheck. And the other is that they didn't think that dads would actually be willing to participate in these studies. And so as a number of things happened, including women, you know, entering the workforce in larger and larger numbers, psychologists started to think, well, maybe dads do serve a function other than just bringing home some money. And they started to study it. And what they found very, very, very consistently is that having an involved father in the household is extremely important for children's development. They have better social outcomes, academic outcomes, psychological outcomes, behavioral outcomes. A lot of this work stems from the Scandinavian countries, which have the most generous parental and paternal leave in the world. And they found that those connected dads, dads that are quote unquote involved with their kids, have kids that do better.
Now, interesting.
The thing that I want to say really quickly for anybody who's out there listening and thinking, well, you know, it's just my family structure, it's just not possible. That's okay. It doesn't mean that your child is going to be doomed or that bad things are going to happen because they don't have an involved father. But if you do have the father available, it's a really, really good idea to try to get him to connect with the kids. And I say that not because it's the mom's responsibility, but one of the other things we find in the literature is that a mom's attitude to fatherhood can actually really facilitate or inhibit the father's relationship with his kids.
Interesting.
So facilitating that like your wife did with you is really, really good for you to build your confidence and skills and to create a tighter bond with your kids as
well. I think
well.
One of the interesting things that happened in our family is being an academic, we get great holidays.
Mm-hmm.
And only much later in high school years, maybe did my kids really, they started to sort of put together and they're listening and talking with other kids about vacations.
Mm-hmm.
And they're talking about how a lot of their friends would vacation with the families and their moms, and then their dads would come and meet them. And then, and they kind of went, it's kind of odd because we they didn't know it any other way than we always vacationed as a family for the entire break.
It's one of the major benefits of working in education. My dad as well, he has his own business and he just was able to be quite flexible. And when I was growing up in high school in Cairo, much like kids growing up in Dubai, I went to the American school there. We would pack up and go back to Canada for the summer. And I was lucky enough to have my dad, but most of my friends, their dads would kind of join for a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
You know, he was a really, really busy guy, going back to what I said earlier, and he worked really hard, but I knew that he always had my back.
Yeah.
And that's the other important thing with our kids, is to connect with them so that they feel safe and secure with us, so that even if we're working, we're studying, we're doing all of these things, we can't be there for every tiny little thing. They know that if something really major happens, mom's there, dad's there, they've got you. That's really key.
And that unconditional side that they can come to you with the bad news and they're not going to get, you know, yelled at. Although I might still yell, but you get it. It's like, you know,
That doesn't mean that, exactly. Yeah. So if you're upset with them or, you know, you punish them or you have a word with them, that doesn't mean you don't love them.
Right.
Those are two different things.
And that's a real hard one to make sure that it's very clear.
Mm-hmm.
But it's something we work at.
Yeah, exactly.
We got a great question we're going to come back to from Jürgen, who wants to talk about third culture kids and growing up in... you know, growing up here, you know, overseas, and how and your take on that and how we sort of navigate those grounds as well.
Okay.
If you're wondering what you're listening to, this is The Call-In Show. Dr. Sarah Rasmi joining us, and we're taking your questions right here on Nightline. The program is Nightline. It's The Call-In Show. We're talking parenting. Dr. Sarah Rasmi joining us. That's www.drsarahrasmi.com if you want to go find her online. And Sarah, we want to talk, Jürgen has sent through a message, how does being a TCK, that's third culture kid, affect kids compared to growing up in their parents' home countries? That's a big one.
Yeah, so that's one of the questions I actually get a lot here, because there are a lot of expat families, and I have professional as well as personal experience with this. So from the professional side, there's a lot of research showing that people that have experience like this develop a number of skills that are really beneficial, especially in the world that we live in. And one of those things is being open to new people, to new experiences, to new ideas. That facilitates communication. So kids that grow up here, they talk to people from a variety of walks of life, different, you know, cultural backgrounds. And so they're able to really connect and communicate across the board, which is great. Something else that happens is people are more cognitively flexible. They are more creative with their problem solving. And so there are a number of benefits in that way. There's also the concern that a lot of parents have that, you know, they're not as connected and they're not able to form sort of those deep roots that people who are born and raised in one place do. So For me, I was born in Geneva, Switzerland. My parents were expats there, and I grew up all over the place. I lived here. My brother was born here. We lived in Cairo. We lived in Cyprus. We lived in Saudi for a while, Canada, Egypt, Australia, U.S., all over the place. My kids are having a similar experience. And really, personally, I find it echoes what we see in literature, and that is there are so many benefits. You fit in everywhere, but at the same time, you don't necessarily belong anywhere
right.
to that same extent. But that's why we love the UAE, because the UAE is one of the only places that you go where you actually meet so many people who are in the same boat, where you can tell them, you know, I've lived in 10 countries. They're like, I've lived in 11.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's not like, really? You've been outside the country? You know people that, you know, aren't from the same background as you? It's nice.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So when we look at this whole thing, if we were to take it back to the basic piece of it, is that it really comes down to how, in a sense, we as parents deal with this with our children, how we talk about it, how we sort of position ourselves, mm-hmm. whether we're short timers or we're looking at this as a real positive experience and saying, well, let's see where it goes, as opposed to really missing being back in India or Canada or the US or Australia.
Yeah, exactly. And there are ways to maintain a connection with your home country for your children. A lot of people will go back home, you know, once a year, every other year. And now with technology, it's easy for people to stay in touch. And, you know, there's so many different groups of people here, and a lot of products and services are around for the BRIC community and the Indian community and every community. So there are ways to foster that connection. But just remembering that, you know, there are a lot of benefits, and these benefits that I listed earlier are really important in this increasingly connected world, and they're going to be good things for our kids when they grow up and they enter the workforce.
So it all comes back again, trusting yourself. You're doing a good thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, this has been the message of the entire program when it comes to being an effective parent, being a good parent, and it's just trusting that you're making the right decisions, and don't second guess yourself. Say, okay, I'm doing it for this reason. This is why we're doing it. You know, my friends might be doing something a little bit different. Mm-hmm. Doesn't mean it's any better.
Exactly.
Just means it's different.
If it works for you, it works for you. Yeah. Keep going with it. Trust your
gut. I guess you can always change too, right? If you're doing something and then you realize, whether it be with an infant and you're feeding a certain kind of food or a certain kind of times, and then you realize, oh, it's not working, and everyone's doing it a different way, and it's not really working that way either. No, I'm going to try
this. But not beating yourself up. That's the really, really key thing, to know you're going to make mistakes, lots of mistakes, and that's okay. What's important is that we reflect on them, we try to grow from them, and as we discussed earlier, if you talk to your kids about that process, then you'll be instilling that in them, and that's really good for their development as well as their adjustments.
Oh, see, trust. Mm-hmm. That's the hardest thing, though.
It is, but you know what?
We practice. Do you teach courses in this and how I can trust myself? Do you work
You know
with
what?
Parents
I
on
don't,
this?
But now yeah, after think, this I think conversation, maybe. I think it's definitely something that I need to develop.
The courses that and the work that you do, the consulting you do, what is the dominant area that you're working
it's
with
It's really on? Just with whatever skills and strategies parents want to learn. So I work with people who are facing specific issues that they would like to overcome. I also work with people who just would like to expand their toolkit and learn how to parent in a more positive way. So my thing is really about positive parenting. And so I offer a lot of workshops and I consult around that.
Okay. Where can we find you for workshops and how can we hook
just
up with you?
Just through my website. So www.drsarahrazmi.com. I'm also on all of the social media platforms at Dr. Sarah Razmi, and all my contact information is there. You can send me an email, contact me through the site or social media platforms. I always write back, and I'm always happy to refer people to somebody. It's important that if somebody reaches out, that they reach out to a good, qualified, licensed professional. And I feel an obligation that if someone comes to me with something that's not in my wheelhouse, I help them find the right fit for them. So even if you are struggling with something that's outside of what I've discussed, I'm more than happy to try to support anybody out there listening however I can.
You have a wealth of experience. Sarah, thank you very much for joining us
thank
on the program.
So
it's been a lot
been
of fun.
It's been really fun.
Yeah, and I hope to get you back on sooner
I'd love
than later.
To. Yeah.
That'd be great. www.drsarahrazmi.com
thank
is
you.
Where you can find her, and Dr. Sarah Razmi on all the socials. Go find her on Instagram. She's really popular there. Sarah, thank you very much. We'll talk to you again soon.
Thank you.